Good morning and welcome to the roundtable and our panel for this 6th of May. Very nice to have you aboard. Let us, we're about to jump into a discussion of a lot of issues, a lot to talk about, and we welcome your input. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Let me introduce our panel to you this morning. First and foremost, we welcome WAMC's Alan Shartok. Good morning, Alan.
My middle name is Lockbox, put money in it. Alan, Lockbox, put money in it, please.
Yes, please would be like your confirmation name.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Your confirmation.
Yeah, that's right. Good point. Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain is here as well. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning.
And WAMC newsman Ray Graff joins us as well. Hi.
Good morning.
What is your middle name anyway, Ray?
William.
Oh, Raymond William.
Yes,
Graff.
Indeed.
Sounds very distinguished.
It is distinguished, as am I.
And yes, you are. Do you know what SPS stands for?
Can you say it on the radio? No. I have no idea.
Self-praise stinks.
All right, fine. Let's move on.
St. Paul's School also. My elementary school.
Is it your alma mater? Yes.
My elementary, yeah. Right.
Your elementary alma mater. Again, we welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. And goodness sakes, isn't there a lot to comment on already? We welcome you, and we'll be getting to your letters in just a few minutes.
So, just as soon as the complaints come in.
Now. So let's start off with a big story that Ray led the newscast with. Prosecutors have issued a grand jury subpoena related to the so-called Moreland Commission the Governor Andrew Cuomo abruptly shut down in March. People briefed on the matter say this to the New York Times, and they're reporting it in their paper this morning. Obviously, this is something that we knew that perhaps something was afoot, because the office of Preet Bharara, the U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York, comes just weeks after he took the unusual step of publicly criticizing the governor's shutdown of the panel and took possession of its investigative files. So we thought perhaps something was in the works, and I guess this is it.
This is huge. I mean, I'm telling you, this is huge, because if the Times story is accurate, and I have no reason to believe it isn't, then he's empaneling a grand jury. You don't empanel grand juries usually, especially when you got a sitting governor of New York sitting on top of the whole thing, unless you've got some reasons for doing it. So the real question to me is whether or not he knows what we don't know. In other words, there's something.
Right. Now, so what would the crime be?
Well, it's very unclear. As you know, there is no crime for people to give you money and to put money into your, you know, $50 million, which is what it's going to be by the time it's all over. But you'll remember that one of the things that we heard from our friends at the Daily News were that Cuomo's people were sending in plays about who should be subpoenaed and who shouldn't. So, for example, one of the names we heard was the real estate industry of the state of New York, and that the governor's office was saying, no, don't subpoena them. Now, that could be very interesting. If you start asking all kinds of questions like, did you give the money, did you say, when did you say it, what did you know, when did you know it, that could be tough stuff.
So the reading between the lines, and the Times uses this word a few times in their article of interference from the governor's office. So that would be the interference of the subpoenas and telling them what to do.
Except, Joe, that the Times has a great quote in there. Maybe Mike knows it better than I, but it is something like, I can't interfere with the Moreland Act Commission. It's my commission. I own it.
Right. It's my commission. I can't interfere with it because it's mine. It is controlled by me, he said last month, according to Crane's New York Business.
Yeah, that kind of a quote will play against him.
It's the kind of thing that could come back and bite you in the posterior.
Yes, exactly. That is. But Ken Lovett from the Daily News broke the story last year that the governor's office had leaned on members of the Moreland Act Commission not to go after the real estate investors who had reportedly been making campaign contributions to the governor. Whether that is the subject of the grand jury probe, we don't know, but certainly a lot of speculation of that.
Well, one would assume that federal prosecutors and district attorneys get tips all the time. We don't know what those tips are. It may well be that this goes nowhere. But on the other hand, if he knows something that we don't know, if somebody has said to him there was a specific quid pro quo, that is exactly why Joe Bruno is on trial right at this minute. For how close did it come to an understanding that if the guy bought the horse, then he would get favors from
if
Bruno.
If you do this, I'll do that.
Right. But usually it means, with one parenthesis in the way that it works, and that is that it says, and here's the parenthesis, into a microphone.
Right.
So as I understand the process, to impanel a grand jury requires a certain level of
egregiousness,
evidence, or at least something
causing
cause. Mm-hmm. Right. So what is it? When are we going to learn what, in fact, that evidence is?
We don't know. And by the way, grand juries, like the Moreland Act, if I'm not wrong, commission, have been used as sort of broad-ranging investigative tools in the past. So in other words, you could put a grand jury together to investigate some mess. And see whether or not anything comes out of it, Ray. So I don't know that you need a specific felony to do it, because there have been investigatory grand juries in the past.
Well, Preet Bharara has been using his office to essentially step in and try to clean up New York government. He's gone after state lawmakers and indicted a few and won some convictions. He's basically described it as a cesspool. He spoke back last year before the Moreland Act Commission, recommending that laws should be changed so that legislators who are convicted of crimes don't get to keep their pensions, and came up with effectively a way to fine them the equivalent of that, so that would have that same effect. I mean, he's had his eyes on cleaning up state government. This could just be a report that comes out of the grand jury that makes recommendations, maybe where the Moreland Commission left off. There could be some criminal activity that they may learn about. They may already suspect some. You know, we don't know, and nobody talks on the record about it.
Can I ask, just to play it out a little bit, because I'm trying to figure this out. So if you're in the mind of the governor and the administration, so if you're the governor, I think, can we all agree that sometimes there are commissions that are government commissions that don't do anything?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Joe. Go ahead with your
story. Okay. So this is just you do this commission. So would it have been better for the governor just to allow the Moreland Commission to go on and be, quote-unquote, ineffective, than pull the plug abruptly and cause the ruckus that it caused and have people look, which then triggered this investigation and so forth?
One would think so. I mean, their midterm report was nothing to write home about. It was very sort of, but on the other hand, this was making people nervous, very nervous. If you've raised $32 million already, and if you're going to raise $50 million in your war chest, there's something else going on here that maybe I shouldn't say, but I think I will.
Go right ahead.
For a change.
Hey, come on, Mike.
And that is, if you are a particular kind of player in the system, if you've made a ton of enemies, often unnecessarily, we know that the Attorney General Schneiderman and the governor don't do well together, or the other way around. Same thing with Tom DiNapoli, who I happen to think, the comptroller, who is one of the nicest men I've ever met in my whole life, and for some inexplicable reason, the governor's been on, you know, his case all along. Then to me, what happens is that there are a lot of people around, because you are that kind of way, who have long knives out. And so you don't know where this stuff comes from. But you do know that you'd better keep your skirts extremely clean before you get hit hard. I mean, I should talk. But
your skirt's pretty clean.
My skirts are extremely clean. But on the other hand, you have to be very careful all the time, because if you make a mistake, somebody's going to be there and know about it.
Now, am I saying the wrong thing here, but yes. Isn't the panel jumping the gun in making the assumption that this has to do with the governor?
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, it could just be that, as Alan did mention, that a grand jury is looking at a broader issue, and maybe just to kind of pick up where the Moreland Commission stopped abruptly, to finish the job of the Moreland Act Commission. And you're right. And they could issue a report that makes recommendations, that sure. provides more evidence for proposed legislation. So, yeah, I think we're jumping the gun.
Okay, with that said, though.
Mm-hmm. He's being defensive
Preet
about it.
Bharara yeah. was critical of the governor, right?
Yes,
I mean, it was.
I think that's
there
true.
There was criticism of the governor before when they started to the investigation and asked for the files and so forth. He was critical of the governor for ending the commission.
Right. But, I mean, there has been reports, too, though, that the commission hadn't been doing a whole lot since it issued its preliminary report in December.
Maybe accidentally on purpose they hadn't
Perhaps.
Been doing it.
You know, yeah. it was sort of lacking sort of direction. It came out with its recommendations. They were preliminary, and they were supposed to come up with a final report maybe by June or something like that. And
now, correct me if I'm wrong, Mike, because mm-hmm. you know much more about this than I
do. I'm not so sure about that, but go ahead.
I'm telling you up, of course. But the people on the commission were distinguished DAs. And things like
well,
that.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay, including mm-hmm. ours here in Albany. Mm-hmm. A wonderful man. But the executive was chosen, I believe, by the governor. Am I right about that? This is the governor's person who was basically running the show.
Well, I think. But the attorney general had staff on it also. I mean, it was a very mixed, you know, set of people, and the district attorneys and the sort of panel members, they started to drop off, actually.
Yeah, but they weren't running the place.
No, you're right.
The place was being run by an executive, so it was fairly safe. And there's one other piece about this, Joe. I know we have to go to a break, but
okay.
but there's one other piece about this that's very interesting to me. And there will be people who say I'm nothing but a troublemaker, but Preet Bharara, the crusading U.S. attorney, is doing such a splendid job, comes directly out of Chuck Schumer's office because he was running Chuck Schumer's staff, I believe. Mm-hmm. And he was appointed by Schumer to his U.S. job. The president appoints, but on the recommendation on the recommendation. So yesterday, Mike, you pointed out to me this morning that Chuck Schumer, the inventor of the Schumer sandwich, was on Morning Joe, and gave a talk about how it was a thinly veiled hint about how he was for fracking. For fracking. The president's for fracking. Many Democrats are for fracking. If the governor finds out it's safe, I would be for fracking, basically.
He certainly was suggesting that New York would get into fracking.
Yeah. Now, I say all of this because Schumer, the governor, fracking, the investigation. I'm not saying that Preet Bharara is proceeding in a political way, but, you know, everybody talks to everybody.
Hmm.
Well, right. I mean, anything like this has to have political, deeply political overtones.
Well, I think it depends on how you conduct yourself. I mean, I really think from a psychological point of view, I think if, you know, you're Elliot Spitzer and you take the James Taylor song and you say, I'm going to, you know, effing roll
churning,
over you.
Churning, yeah, burning yeah. funk.
Right,
yes,
right.
Yes.
I'm going to roll over you. You know, there will be people who don't like Elliot Spitzer as a result of that telephone call, and on and on.
Especially so, Assemblyman Tedesco, right?
Yeah. So I'm just simply saying this is a very interesting story in the Times today, and frankly, they're to be congratulated for it because they beat everybody.
Well, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about this. We'll go to some mail, and then we'll take a break, and we'll hit a lot of other topics on the other side of the news. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. A reminder, you can take WAMC with you. Download our new mobile app for streaming audio or headlines or podcasts and more. Just go to iTunes.
Like what? You said add more. Can you
and
be
more.
Specific?
It says right here in the copy. You could, and you and
could,
more.
That's a no-no in copy, by
you
the way.
Tweet.
You don't say add more. It's a,
okay.
a throwaway.
So, meaning if you want a specific news story, if you want to hear Alan's comments on something, if you want to hear your comments on something, you want to hear Vox Pop, right?
You want to put money in the lockbox?
You can put, that's at WAMC.org. But for the mobile app, you go to iTunes or Google Play App Store, you search WAMC, you install it, and the fun never ends.
And more.
And more.
And by the way, just very quickly, if I had written that, I would have written it differently. I'd go to, say, you could go to the iTunes App Store, you can go to the something App
Google
Store.
Google Play,
because
right.
The way it's condensed sounds like it's one place. Oh. Do you understand my
issue? Well, it says or.
Most people. So we're editing the copy live.
Yeah. So you go to the
compelling
iTunes.
Radio, isn't it?
You go to the iTunes or Google Play. By the way, I just assume when this makes it into the studio that it's been lawyered.
Right. Well, every time you pick up that phone and ask the lawyer a question, it's cha-ching.
I just assume that if it made it here, yeah, and we were told to read it, that it was said. Anyway, you get the idea.
And more.
Raymond. Roundtable, WAMC.org, if you'd like to comment and give us legal advice. We love it. Roundtable, WAMC.org.
Everybody loves Raymond.
Support for WAMC comes from Pine Cobble School, Williamstown, Massachusetts, where science, art, and English classes take place outside on the 20-acre campus. A good beginning never ends. PineCobble.org. Dr. Jonathan Sumber, podiatrist, Kingston, a second-generation practice focusing on family foot problems, laser treatment available, 845-331-0601. An Albany Institute of History and Art, GE, presents the Mystery of the Albany Mummies, using ancient artifacts and modern technologies to uncover secrets of the museum's mummies, through June 8th, albanyinstitute.org.
We love your letters. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We're going to take a news break, and when we come back, we have a lot of other stories to get to. But before we do that, let's check in on the letter or two that we have, Alan.
I got one. Bob called. Bob wrote, and it said, is it possible that Governor Cuomo is being provided political cover via a federal investigation as opposed to him allowing the Moreland Commission to continue? Well, anything is possible. I don't see it. I think this is this is not good for the governor.
And did you just get one in?
Oh, did I? Well, I got to make sure I didn't or did. Everything's, you know, this is hard to... Oh, Tony said.
Yes.
Let's see. Lots of trouble comes from ambitious politicians starting as prosecutors to get big media so they can later run for office. Our justice system needs fairness and not be influenced by political influence. France split the justice, judging, and prosecuting function apart from the political side.
Say we.
No. It is yes. Well, it doesn't make any sense.
Yes, we.
Say we.
It is yes.
We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org.
Bilingual roundtable.
Yes.
Sacre bleu, get to the break. Jeez.
We'll be back after this break. Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable panel. And we love hearing from you. Roundtable at WAMC.org. And in just a few minutes, about 20, we'll be getting an update from Megan Finnegan about the lockbox, where there's a lockbox challenge in place. And we'll find out more about that and get an update coming up in just a few minutes. Before we do that, we have lots of news stuff to get to, and let us begin with another Albany-centric story with some pretty good implications because it's been around for a long time. But the retrial of Joe Bruno got underway yesterday in federal court.
Yeah, our reporter at the Times Union, Rob Gavin, is saying today that the retrial is a lot more combative than the original trial a few years ago, where Senator Bruno was convicted and then later the conviction was thrown out after a Supreme Court ruling regarding the language and the way that honest services cases are prosecuted anyway. So yesterday, the attorneys and the prosecutors came in strong. Basically, the prosecution contends that the 85-year-old former state Senate majority leader held a bribe-filled no-show job. Meanwhile, his attorney slammed the government's case as nothing but hogwash. So a lot of rhetoric. And today, testimony is expected to begin. Witnesses will be brought in. The federal prosecutors will bring in, whether it's today, I'm not sure, but a Loudonville businessman who's instrumental in their prosecution, Jared Abbruzzese.
The horseman.
Right. In addition to paying a lot of money for a horse that wasn't worth much, the senator. Yes. He also paid consultant fees to Senator Bruno, and that is the crux of the case that the federal government is trying to make, that it was a quid pro quo, and in return for these consultant fees, Senator Bruno delivered state contracts or helped to get payments freed up that were going to companies that Abbruzzese was related to, and to try to help him get the takeover of the state wagering and racing, the racing association, things like that. So the testimony will be probably pretty quick, they say, because they've narrowed the cases, and they expect it to be about a 2-week trial.
Well, I got two questions here. One's an observation, which is that the judge shortened the trial. Instead of being at 9 o'clock, it starts at 10 o'clock. And he did that out of consideration, I think, for Bruno's age and coming off of a cancer operation.
Yeah, Bruno had requested a shorter trial day.
So now, but the judge said specifically, I don't want to see Bruno using that time out front, talking to the reporters. So what we do see now is that Bruno was overheard saying to somebody, as opposed to standing before him. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, there was still a little comment, but I think he was under enormous pressure to say something, and basically just said a sentence as he got into his car. But the other trial was characterized, his first federal trial was characterized by, holding court outside the federal courthouse in Albany. And he would, people would just gather around, they'd get all their cameras up, and he would talk and answer all the questions that were thrown at them.
Oh, he'd go for a long time.
Yeah. Right. And the judge essentially said, well, if we're going to shorten the trial day, don't use it to hold a press conference every day outside the courthouse. Yeah. I don't know that he did that yesterday. It'll be interesting as it rolls out to see how much he actually says.
Now, my question, of course, is, we know that the legislature, I hate to say it quite this way, has a reputation as a sort of major house of ill repute. And there is horse trading going on all the time.
Literally.
Everybody has something they want. They hire a lawyer. They hire a lobbyist. They give a ton of money to a legislator one way or the other, and they expect results. In other words, people give money because they want something back for that money. They're making an investment. So my question here is, what would you have to do to make this trial unique? You'd have to show Abbruzzese saying, he told me that if I did this for him, he would do that for me. That testimony would be very damning.
Exactly.
But if you can't, if it's just that you show the results of their friendship, I don't know, unless you're a jury that has just had enough, that you could start holding people responsible without a specific quid pro quo spoken into a microphone or done some way with entrapment by an FBI agent.
Yeah, and that is the burden of the federal prosecutors, and certainly if there were a tape, if he had said it into a microphone and there were a tape, we would have heard it as evidence in the first trial. So what they're going to try to demonstrate, and this is based on what was the testimony in the original trial, is that Abbruzzese told Bruno of problems he was having getting funds freed up that were promised to a company that he ran and that he was part of, Evident Technologies, and they were due a state grant, and it was blocked, and Bruno was able to help him right after Bruno became a consultant to him. And whether that is that quid pro quo is really up for the prosecutor to make, and then for the jury to decide.
I think the second part is really important, which is you're sitting on a jury, you've heard over and over and over again how bad the legislative process is, how corrupt it all is. The question is, do you need the same burden of proof that you might have needed 10 years ago or 5 years ago or a year ago? Or you're just saying, oh, come on now, they're all guilty, I'm just going to vote that way.
Well, it's a very broad jury pool. And I think what, unfortunately, what happens is a lot of people are not listening to the news every day, and they're not reading the papers every day and the web every day about this topic. And not everybody is as up on the level of corruption. Just as you say that, there's also a great deal of sympathy for Senator Bruno, who is a very popular, very successful.
I have it. Personally, I have it.
Oh, exactly. And some people, I was talking to Rob Gavin on Monday morning, who's covering the trial for us, and he was saying he's getting emails from people saying, why doesn't the state just leave him alone? Well, it's the federal government. I mean, people aren't aware exactly what's happening. They certainly are aware of the contribution Senator Bruno has made, mostly because they may drive along I-90 and see the stadium in his name, or they may see the bust of him at the Albany County Airport, or they may see other things that honor him after his long reign as the state Senate majority leader, where he flowed a lot of state money into the region.
Yeah, they use so much so that they used to say, if you put one more thing into the region, the whole place would sink.
Right, exactly.
But especially on that side of the river.
Yeah. But in that, there's a great deal of sympathy for him. So while some people may be jaded about general government corruption and the status of state government, others may also be extremely sympathetic. So these intangibles may play a big role in what the jury decides.
Yeah. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue and not only get a lockbox update, but also continue with one or two more stories and find out what's on your mind. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC goes from Kenver Limited, hosting a summer opening event May 23rd from 5 to 7 p.m. with tastings of wine, olive oil, beer, honey, cheese, dog treats, and more. Adults, kids, and four-legged family members welcome. Kenver.com. Charles Padula DDS, Union Avenue, Schenectady, offering cosmetic dentistry including porcelain laminates, crowns, implants, and Invisalign orthodontics. PaduladDDS.com. And Barry Price Architecture, since 1996, specializing in buildings that integrate modernism and sustainability with regional materials and aesthetics. BarryPriceArchitecture.com.
In a major decision on the role of religion in government, the Supreme Court on Monday ruled that the Constitution allows town boards to start their sessions with sectarian prayers. The ruling by a 5-4 vote divided the court's more conservative members from its liberal ones, and their combative opinions reflected very different views on the role of faith in public life, in contemporary society, and in the founding of the Republic. Justice Anthony Kennedy, writing for the majority, said that a town in upstate New York had not violated the Constitution by starting its public meetings with a prayer from a chaplain of the month, who was almost always a Christian and who sometimes used distinctly sectarian language. The prayers were ceremonial, Justice Kennedy wrote, and served to signal the solemnity of the occasion. The ruling cleared the way for sectarian prayers before meetings of local governments around the nation with only the lightest judicial supervision. It seems like this issue has been around for a very long time when it comes to the separation of church and state. So this is a major decision.
Yeah, it's a major decision, although we've had similar decisions.
This is
a little bit more specific. But I have to tell you, these are the same people, these Supreme Court justices, who insist on originality, meaning that the Constitution is what you say it is. Second Amendment, there's no question. That's what it says it is. So therefore, everybody can run around with a gun. On the other hand, this is interpretive as opposed to what they're doing. And I find it really disheartening. There's not a lot you could do about it because that's a 5-4 decision, the same five guys again and again and again. But I'm very disheartened by this. I really am.
I thought Justice Kennedy's comment that the prayers in both settings were, quote, meant to lend gravity to the occasion and reflect values long part of the nation's heritage.
That's a position. All right. We've certainly all been at places where somebody has come on and started a legislative session with a prayer. But go to the New York State Legislature, you'll see it. See it. But you'll see, I think, more of a breadth of thought in terms of a rabbi or this or that, which is very different from in our own listening area.
Well, there's great inclusion, right?
What'd you say?
There's great inclusion when you see
when it's done right.
When it's done in the New York State Legislature and so forth.
Now, there are humanists, of course, who will say no religion should be represented there because there are many people in this country who are atheists.
My question would be the Pledge of Allegiance.
Sure.
Would be a way to add that solemnity and gravity to the situation.
Although there is that line, under God.
Under God, right.
Which was added not that long ago.
Eisenhower administration, I believe.
Yeah, in the 50s, right? It was restored, wasn't it? Or was it added? I don't know.
I thought it was added.
Just added, okay.
I resented it so that when I'm doing the Pledge of Allegiance, I often leave that.
Well, I mean, your coin, just look at your dollar bill or your coin in God we trust. I mean, these are I think the court has found over and over again that these are assertions that are based in tradition, that they reflect the ethnic and the cultural background of people, which includes, of course, their faith. And a lot of people are less offended by this if it's handled in a more inclusive kind of way. And when you do see it over at the legislature, you don't find anybody sort of preachy. They look for common ground in how they describe, or how they present their prayer or their offering and invoke the Creator. You know, there's more, generalness to it. And
you're right, but not always.
But not always. No, I absolutely. And I think that was one of the complaints that in the town of Greece, which is a suburb of Rochester where this case was footed, some were getting up there when it was Reverend so-and-so's term. He got up there and used the moment to evangelize and try to bring people into the fold, perhaps, or maybe chastise, invoking the Lord or quoting the Bible or something. And it can become very political very quickly. It can become very offensive to people who are not of that faith very quickly. And it can be so it's one of those things where it really requires people to be open-minded and to accept others in the process of invoking their own traditions.
So what do you learn from this? We learn that you... This is a rhetorical question. What do we learn from this? We learn that with a 5-4 majority of this kind sitting up there on the court, be careful about what you ask for because you pretty well can predict what's going to happen.
Well, I think this is not done. Justice Kennedy, and quoting this article from the New York Times, Adam Liptak's article, Justice Kennedy said, he suggested that some prayers may be unacceptable if offered consistently, including ones that denigrate non-believers or religious minorities, threaten damnation, or preach conversion, which was what Mike was talking about, happened perhaps occasionally in the town of Greece. So, clearly, this will be back before the court. Interesting the way that the conservative side argued this.
Well, I'm a little confused about what you just said. If, in fact, it has been done in Greece, in other words, gone over those lines, then how come he voted with it?
This, I think, is the heart of what the conservative decision was all about. And again, quoting the New York Times, Justice Kennedy said legislative prayers may have sectarian content and need not, quote, be addressed only to a generic God. He added that it would be perilous for courts to decide when prayers crossed a constitutional line and became impermissibly sectarian. Here he says, to hold that invocations must be non-sectarian would force the legislatures that sponsor prayers on the courts that are asked to decide these cases to act as supervisors and censors of religious speech, a rule that would involve government in religious matters to a far greater degree than is in the case under the town's current practice of neither editing or approving prayers in advance nor criticizing their content. Lana Kagan says, hogwash.
Well, she's right. And also, it seems to me he's a little bit inconsistent. He says what would be offensive, but then
he suggested.
Well,
there's not any policing. There's not any other than, you know, public dissent about it, which is also free speech. You know, if somebody was going to proselytize from the podium at a town board meeting, you know, people would not accept that. I mean, maybe it'll be self-policed in the sense that if it's offensive, the localities will steer away from it. You know, that is the hope.
Well, hope springs eternal.
We're going to go to one more story before we take a quick break and then come back with a Lockbox update. But the death rate in Massachusetts dropped significantly after adopted mandatory health care coverage in 2006. That is according to a study released Monday, offering evidence that the country's first experiment with universal coverage and the model for crucial parts of President Obama's health care law has saved lives, according to health economists.
No, I have no doubt about it. I mean, if you offer people a doctor and they go and you find out, for example, you have diabetes, or you find out that there's something you do and they put you on metformin or whatever else they can do, that you're going to live longer. I mean, what part of this don't we understand? You take a look at some societies in this world that have no health care and people die 20 years earlier.
No, I was going to say Romney Care worked.
Romney Care works.
Romneycare, Obamacare. The study tallied deaths in Massachusetts from 2001 to 2010 and found that the mortality rate, the number of deaths per 100,000 people, fell about 3% in the 4 years after the law went into effect. The decline was steepest in counties with the highest proportions of poor and previously uninsured people, which we should note was as designed, right? That's how it was designed.
Yeah, and it's one of the reasons that the program itself, there's a subtext here, which is, you know, on the part of some people, the poor don't deserve health care. Don't use my money to give the poor health care. And that's what it's all about. And now we see that it works. So are those people going to change their mind and say they're, quote, they're getting everything? No, I doubt it.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll get a lockbox update and more. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Support for WAMC goes from Center for Better Hearing, Glens Falls, New York. Dr. Susan Boja and Cara Boudour providing comprehensive hearing and hearing aid services. HearingBest.com. 62 Center for Theater and Dance, the theater department presenting African-American playwright Issa Davis's Bull Rusher, directed by Charlotte Brathwaite, May 8th through May 10th, 62center.williams.edu. And Steve Lewis Subaru, Hadley, Massachusetts, a new and used Subaru dealer serving the Pioneer Valley, Hartford, and Springfield. Offering new Subarus plus used cars, trucks, and SUVs, stevelewissubaru.com.
I'm sure you've been hearing the promos and hearing us talk about it, but we have a great challenge on that goes through the beginning of the fund drive, which is on June 2nd. And we need to raise a lot of money. And if we raise a lot of money, we get a lot of money. Right, Alan? We have a challenge on the table.
It almost sounds, I mean, the reason that I have a sort of pain in my left lower quadrant is because I'm so scared about this. I mean, somebody comes along and they say to you, I'll give you $25,000, but you have to raise this $200,000, which means that by the first day of the drive, we have to have at least $312,000 or something?
$325,000
in order to do this. And so the money, the first day we started, the money is coming in. What was yesterday?
Well, we started at $125,000 yesterday, and we raised $8,000 yesterday. We had a lot of members donating online and sending in their renewal notices. So now we are up to $133,000.
Megan, that's good. So, but it's—I hate to say it—not enough.
It's a long way to go.
No, we really—I mean, it's very scary. Now, look, this station belongs to everybody. It does. It's all us. It's up to everybody to do this, and there's no question about it. If you're listening to it, why not do something? Whether it's $5 or $50 or $125, in which case you get the official WAMC mug with your name on it,
ooh,
and 2 weeks later you're married.
To the mug?
No.
Is that a good thing?
Yes.
Oh, well, I guess it depends on who you talk to. Yeah, that's a good point.
Or you're divorced. Somebody takes a, your spouse takes a look
and
at
then
it.
Then you have to get another mug.
Your spouse takes a look at it and says, you gave money to that.
Put somebody else's name on the mug.
This is taking an ugly turn.
It's $125, and if you look online, there's a picture of the mug, and it looks great.
It's beautiful.
Very nice. Real, it looks really good.
Yep, so we had a lot of people pledge for it yesterday.
That's wonderful. And so $125 for that. But any amount that you can do is important. Whatever you can do.
Please.
Because it is, it's going to help us get to this challenge. And look, if we do this and we reach 325 and then we get the $25,000 for Mr. Big, that is more than a third of the drive that we already have behind us before we start.
Well, I'd love to beat, but even by a dollar, what we had going in the last time.
Oh, it's going to be hard.
Because we had a four-day drive last time.
Right.
Yeah. And I just want to point out this income tax argument, because, you know, that was right before people had to file.
The end of the year.
And all the rest. So I just want everybody to know that it's still deductible if you do it now.
Right.
You don't have to wait till the last minute.
That's right. You don't have to be a procrastinator.
Yeah.
You can do it right away.
That's the curse of American youth.
WAMC.org is where you'll find all of the information.
And more.
When you go to the website, you will find out everything that you need to know about the challenge, about getting the mug, about helping us where we are, and all of that good stuff. So WAMC.org. Megan Finnegan, thank you so much for keeping us up to date. We look forward to your update tomorrow.
Okay, thanks.
Lockbox.
Thank you very much.
Off she goes.
We were just saying lockbox?
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. WAMC.org to find out about the...
Lockbox.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.